Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. On July 1st, 2015, a young woman named Kate Steinle was walking down the San Francisco pier with her father when a man fired a handgun, and the bullet struck and killed her. The man who fired the gun, Jose Inez Garcia Zarate, had been deported 5 times and was released from a San Francisco jail just 2 months before the shooting. The fact that the city released Zarate instead of contacting immigration enforcement has brought national attention and criticism of San Francisco's sanctuary policy. But supporters of the city's policy say it protects the public safety by encouraging immigrants to cooperate with authorities. And today is the first day of opening arguments of that murder trial. The jury of 6 men and 6 women were selected last week. And joining me now is KQED reporter Marisa Lagos, who has been following the lead up to the trial. And welcome, Marisa.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Glad to have you. And we should say that there were over about 1,000 potential jurors called. We do have 6 men and 6 women, mostly in their 20s and 30s. But talk about the fact that the jurors had a 14-page questionnaire before they even were impaneled.
Yeah, I mean, I think it speaks to the fact that this murder trial, while potentially a fairly straightforward case in the courtroom, is really part of this broader national debate that exploded, in particular during the presidential election, when then candidate Donald Trump really sort of brought it in. So, I mean, the backstory, you know, is this issue of sanctuary cities and immigration, and this guy had a long history of illegal reentry and getting caught. And so I think that there was a real concern on both sides with the DA and the defense, and probably the judge too, about seating a jury that could kind of set aside that bigger immigration and political debate and really focus on the facts of this case.
So essentially questions about do you have any kind of bias where Latinos are concerned? Do you have any kind of xenophobia where immigrants are concerned, documented or undocumented? Guns? I mean, it all came into this.
Well, right, because this does hit so many things. We talk about immigration. We talk about sanctuary city. We talk about guns. You know, how do you feel about police officers and guns? So, yeah, it is definitely a case that I think, I mean, we thought that it might actually take a little longer than it did to impanel this jury, but they got it done, and here we are on the first day, and opening arguments, I imagine, are going to be very interesting this morning, because I think both sides have some things that they've kind of been hinting at in their conversations with us, that they are, you know, excited to sort of finally have a chance to lay out.
And the jury will not be sequestered?
No.
So the prosecution has agreed that no evidence ties Garcia Zarate to auto burglaries. I mean, this was a gun that was stolen out of a car, and he claims he found the gun on the ground. So we're beginning from a prosecutorial standpoint. I mean, they're trying to play in second-degree murder here with a deficit, really.
We'll see. I mean, I think that it's going to be interesting. You know, this is one of those cases that there was so much, I think, misinformation or sort of semi-true information that I know when I started talking just to people in my life about it, they said there's no way this guy couldn't, you know, be found guilty. Because there's no question that the bullet from this gun did kill Kate Steinle and that he was on the pier.
But forgive me, they're trying to say it ricocheted and bounced off.
Well, it did ricochet. And that's
In a way that he couldn't control and that, in effect, he wasn't targeting her. He wasn't shooting at a crowd. He wasn't targeting anything.
Yeah, so let me maybe start with what everyone agrees on, right? Everybody agrees that this gun was stolen from a federal ranger's car, a park, Bureau of Land Management ranger. It was part of a rash of auto burglaries and somehow ended up on this pier. And as you said, as part of the sort of pretrial motions were this agreement that they're not going to bring in the auto burglaries to this case, but that the prosecution will stipulate to the jury that they have no evidence tying Garcia Zarate to the actual theft of the gun. And also what everyone agrees on is that, you know, Kate Steinle was not shot point blank. There was the gun went off, it ricocheted, and went about 100 feet from where this man was sitting or standing at that point, perhaps, to hit her. So that is something that actually police investigators testified to in the pretrial stuff. And so that's not at question. I think the question is, you know, what the DA is going to argue is that simply firing a gun in a place like Pier 14 on the Embarcadero, a very popular place with tourists and locals, is in itself, you know, negligence and they're going to say homicide. What the defense is going to argue, as you mentioned, is that Garcia Zarate, they believe, found something wrapped in a t-shirt or some sort of cloth, picked it up, and that as he was handling it, it went off. What the defense
hair trigger.
Yeah, so that's going to be a big part of this, is what type of gun this was. It's called a Sig Sauer. It's a 40 caliber handgun, and it is very popular with law enforcement. And what Matt Gonzalez, the defense attorney, is saying is that basically there are two settings on this gun, and one of them is basically a hair trigger, and that would allow this situation to happen where you might handle it and it would just go off.
We're talking with Marisa Lagos, reporter with KQED's California Politics and Government Desk, and you mentioned the Ranger. Our own Alex Emsley broke a story here about the Ranger.
Yeah. So Alex has been chasing this down for many weeks. He got a hold of an email that showed that essentially about 6 months after the shooting and this theft that, you know, had been reported, this Ranger, John Wachowski, had left his gun in the car unsecured, and that
which
it got stolen.
Which is against the law. I mean, yeah. He was essentially committing a crime, even though he was a Ranger, right?
Yeah, and actually there was some, I mean, it was a misdemeanor. There could have been charges, although there were some loopholes for law enforcement, sort of, that was kind of a squishy question. Which have been kind of tightened up since then by State Senator Jerry Hill from the Bay Area. But yeah, so Wachowski, you know, it's been interesting. The Bureau of Land Management has been very close-lipped about him, about their own protocols, about whether he broke those protocols by leaving this gun in the car. But ultimately, you know, I think a lot of people would think that if a cop left a gun unsecured and it got stolen and used in a murder, that they might, you know, face some penalties.
Discipline,
there.
At least.
And actually, yeah. Not too long ago, a sheriff's deputy in San Francisco was fired for something similar, where they left a gun unsecured and it got stolen. And this happens all the time. We just reported one in Kern County that included some semi-automatic rifles that were stolen out of a police car. But, so I would like to say, and I've said this before, but I really do think that if this guy had not been undocumented, that the big national debate over this might have been about police officers and their guns. But long story short, Alex was able to chase down the story and prove that this guy got promoted 6 months later and is now a supervisor. And it would appear, and we don't know for sure, but that he really didn't suffer any internal consequences from this and was maybe rewarded afterward.
Well, he was promoted. I mean, that's the story that Alex broke. Yeah. But also, in Alex's story, there was reference to the fact that there was another gun in the trunk of his car that didn't follow rules or protocol.
Yeah, I think it might have been in the glove compartment. But yes, there was another gun. Apparently, this one was his service gun. The other one was not stolen. It was a personal gun, but it was also left unsecured. And we know that this this theft was tied to the string of auto burglaries of, I think, a lot of sort of rental cars and other, you know, it was in a tourist area up near the Embarcadero, because the Ranger's backpack with ammunition that fits in the Sig Sauer handgun was found in another car that was burglarized. But we should say the jury's not going to hear any of that. That's been sort of put out of the court case, and what they will hear about is just this gun, the fact that it was stolen but not by Garcia Zarate, and we do expect the Ranger to testify. So that will be a very interesting day.
And Judge Feng also disallowed a TV interview from this, I believe.
So we are not allowed as reporters to have any electronics in the courtroom. The only thing people will be reporting on in there is a pencil and paper. And so no phones, no computers even to take notes. So, yeah, this will be like, you know, back in the 90s, back before Twitter.
Well, we'd like to hear from you as this trial unfurls, and your thoughts, your reflections, but also any questions you might have. Marisa Lagos has been doing yeoman work here. She mentioned Alex Emsley's yeoman work, and hats go off to both of these fine journalists that we have in our world here of KQED. And we do want to hear from you. Our toll-free number is available, and you can join us now with any questions or comments you might have. The number to call is 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls and welcome your joining the conversation. So please feel free to join us. This, of course, is a big national debate as well about immigration and illegal immigration, and it had a lot to do with President Trump's ascendancy. Again, we do welcome your calls, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or let us know what you're thinking by going to our website and posting questions or comments there. It's kqed.org/forum, and you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. We're going to go to your calls and emails. There's also, we should mention, Marisa, a family suit over a stolen federal gun that's going forward?
Yeah, the family filed suit over the federal government, who had this Garcia Zarate, the defendant, in their possession up until a couple months before the murder, and they were the ones that transferred him to San Francisco. The San Francisco was named in the suit, although a judge has dismissed that part of it. And I actually think the only part of the suit that's still intact is the part against the Bureau of Land Management, although a circuit judge could, I think, reinstate some other portions. So that case is sort of on hold until this criminal case plays out. And we are expecting the case, not the deliberations, but to last about a month.
Most of the jurors are in their 20s or 30s. Is that correct?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. And here's Ernst, who writes, the defense in this case is going to claim that the defendant found this gun and it discharged accidentally. How would we feel if this was a child instead of an undocumented immigrant? I think this hypothetical brings out the horror of having unsecured guns left around. And again, we do want to hear from you. You can join us either by phone, toll free at 866-733-6786, or email us forum@kqed.org. Marisa, you had something to add?
Oh, I was just going to say that that's, I think, exactly what the defense attorney is arguing. He said this in some of our pieces leading up to this, which is that, you know, if he had not been an undocumented immigrant, the public defender does not believe this would be a murder charge. The DA, of course, disputes that. But I think that is an interesting analogy and one I've thought of. Say, if you believe the defense and this is what happened, what if this had been a child or some, you know, sort of person who didn't have this complicated history? And how would that have played out? And then what would have the consequences had been for the ranger, perhaps, if that in an alternate scenario?
It's a complicated history, particularly because this is a man who entered this country illegally, what, 5 times?
Well, he was caught and deported 5 times. Yeah, so I think it's important to get all this on the record. I mean, and this has been a real sort of goal in our reporting is to, you know, I think set straight some of the misinformation out there. So this man, Jose Inez Garcia Zarate, had come and gone from the U.S. quite a few times over the last 30 years. He had some drug charges from a couple other states back in the early 90s. But in 1998, he started serving what would end up being 3 5-year prison terms. Essentially, every time he left or he was deported, he tried to come back in and he got caught at the border. And so really, border security worked in this case. But he faced pretty harsh prison time sentences because he had these relatively minor but still drug felonies in his past. And so that last 5-year term ended in 2015. The federal government did something they had never done that time, which is instead of calling Immigration and Customs Enforcement and deporting him, they called San Francisco and said there's a 20-year-old marijuana charge on the books. The sheriff's department, following their own policy, said, of course, we'll take him. It's a court warrant, and we have to let that court case play out. They brought him back to San Francisco, and the very next day, that marijuana charge was dismissed. Apparently, the evidence had been destroyed. And so he was eventually released from San Francisco jail, and, you know, to the sanctuary point, he was not handed over to Immigration and Customs Enforcement. They did not call ICE because that is under the law in San Francisco. The sheriff is barred from doing that.
Well, we do have Alex Emsley on the line. Alex, a reporter for KQED, who, as we said, broke the story, and kudos for that. Alex, good to have you. Welcome.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, could you give us a little bit more background about why no charges were brought against Agent Wachowski? Not only no charges brought, but why he wasn't even disciplined and got promoted, in fact?
Yeah, I mean, you can kind of go from, like, the most serious potential repercussions, which would be some sort of a criminal charge. You know, it's a little unclear, but at the time in 2015, the best that I can say is that, you know, it was possible to charge a law enforcement officer for failing to secure their firearm and it's been stolen and used in a crime, but incredibly rare, and the penalties were basically non-existent. So even if there was a charge, there wouldn't have been much repercussion for that. Since then, those laws have been strengthened, and there would be a potential for a $1,000 fine associated with that through a criminal charging process.
But how did he get promoted in this? I mean, it almost seems not only counterintuitive, it seems, egregious on the face of it.
Yeah, I don't have a good answer for that. We have asked the Bureau of Land Management to try to explain that decision. They've declined. Saying that they basically offer no comment or verification whatsoever on employment issues related to pending litigation. What it appears to be is that their policies in place in 2015, the rules that these law enforcement officers are required to follow, didn't necessarily contemplate losing a gun out of a personal vehicle. As best as we can tell, John Wachowski was driving his personal vehicle when he came through San Francisco. And while the Bureau had policies in place requiring very specific locking devices and such for, official government vehicles, those rules didn't apply to a personal vehicle, and they couldn't hold him to standards that weren't on the books at the time. Now, of course, since then, those policies have also been updated, and he would be in violation of the policies that are now in place.
Well, initially, the San Francisco police dealt with him, didn't they, from the start, I mean?
Yes, he filed a police report almost immediately with the SFPD, and, of course, they initially talked to him about the auto burglary, and then several days later talked to him again about his firearm being used in this homicide.
So Alex Emsley again, who is actually in the courtroom now as we speak. And Alex, thank
you. Just outside of it, yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us. And again, good work. Let me.
Okay, thank you.
We're going to go to our callers here and bring them into this discussion. And Chris, we begin with you. Good morning. You're on the air.
I was so glad to hear your first guest, your regular guest, say that about the hair trigger on this and that this person wouldn't have probably even been charged. The cop, the ranger, is the one who should be charged in this. If the defendant were not undocumented and had any kind of money, this would never, I don't think this ever would have gone this far.
All right. Did you want to say anything more? I'm sorry, Chris, it sounded like you wanted to make that statement, and I appreciate hearing from you. Let me go to another caller. We'll go to next to John in Palo Alto. John, welcome.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I find it unfortunate and odd that for the longest time, opposition to sanctuary cities and illegal immigration was a solidly progressive liberal position that was supported by most members of the Democratic Party, including the leadership. Unfortunately, this seems to have flipped primarily out of reaction to Trump. But I would remind the listeners that it was Congresswoman Barbara Jordan, the liberal African-American congresswoman from Houston, a Democrat, who headed up the commission that strongly recommended that we halt illegal immigration and secure our borders and enforce our laws. That was back in the 90s. I hope that we can get back to that essentially progressive liberal position.
Okay. Again, I thank you for that. Good to hear opinions here. In fact, let me read one. Enrique writes, what a deflection. Criminals commit crimes, not guns. The ranger was the victim who legally possessed his gun. Kate was killed by the failures of San Francisco's politically correct liberal policies. And another listener writes, how was this violent criminal and convicted felon able to come to San Francisco after being deported five times? After committing other crimes, he was set free by the city of San Francisco only to commit this violent shooting and death of Kate Steinle. There should be no sanctuary by the city of San Francisco or other cities to violent criminals. That put the whole society in unnecessary danger and harm's way. Sorry, go ahead, Marissa.
Yeah, I just want to respond to that because I think that it perpetuates some of the false information that we've heard. And that is not to say that you can't think this guy is guilty of murder and should go to prison. Like, that's a separate question. But he was not a violent criminal. Prior to this, he had had no violent felonies. And indeed, his prison time, as I said before, was all because of illegal reentry. It was for crossing the border illegally. The reason he came to San Francisco is the federal government sent him here. And so I think, to me, there's culpability really on both sides if you talk about the city releasing him, but the feds releasing him. As I said, in every other circumstance where the federal government had him, they handed him over to ICE for deportation. In this case, they handed him to San Francisco to face a 20-year-old marijuana charge.
And Ross Mercurimi, who was the sheriff, would not hand him over to ICE. I mean,
no, which he was barred from doing under the city's law. And I think that at the time there was a lot of sort of internal politics in San Francisco between the sheriff and the Board of Supervisors and the mayor, and that's we could spend
that's a
half
a whole
hour
other
on
story.
That. But I will say that the current sheriff who ran, in part on saying we do need to take a look at this, I have talked to her. I have talked to her office. If this man were in prison or in jail today and he was supposed to be released under San Francisco, if his charges got dropped or whatever, they would still release him. This had nothing to do, so I think that there's a lot of questions, including why would the Fed send him to San Francisco for a marijuana charge? I mean, we've never been very harsh on marijuana in San Francisco.
Well, we'll bring some more callers into this discussion. Again, Marissa Lago is here with us in studio. And on the line, Neil, you're welcome to the program. Go ahead, Neil.
Yeah, if anyone could talk about the judge's order on not having what I'll call an open court for this case and whether it's been challenged by any media organization. So to go through the explanation on the pen and paper only in the courtroom.
Yeah, good question, Marissa.
You know, judges get a lot of discretion about what they're going to allow in their courtroom. So essentially, in any case, we get, as the public and the media, an opportunity to ask them to let us videotape it, audio, record it, whatever. And they have pretty much total discretion to decide whether or not they're going to do that. In this case, he did not allow that. And so we will all be there. There's a handful of media, including KQED, that has a permanent seat in the courtroom. There are a couple seats that are going to be raffled off every day. And then there's also an opportunity for the public to sit in on this trial. So if this person, for example, was interested in that, you could contact San Francisco Superior Court, and there is a process for actually applying to get one of those seats, at least for some of the days. And I have that information somewhere, so if somebody's interested, they could always reach out to me at KQED.
And let me thank the caller and move along and take more of your calls. We go next to, is it Hakan?
Hi.
Yeah, hi.
So my question was just answered. I was going to ask about the proceedings about the courts, whether the general public can attend, and what we need to do. But I see that there's some like restrictions in terms of like available seats, and there's like a application process for that. Thank you so much for like taking this case and like talking about it. I hear like great reporting, very factual, and especially from your guests.
Thank you for the call and the question, and let me go on the question to you, Marisa.
I think he said we answered the question, right? That you can apply to be in there. And again, like, it's not just because we can't record it doesn't mean we won't be reporting on every twist and turn. I think there's a lot of attention, and we will be there along with basically every other big media organization in the Bay Area, and not surprisingly, Fox News.
And let me thank Hakan for the call and take another caller, and that's you. It's Ho from San Jose. Or Mo, excuse me. Mo, go ahead.
Professor Krasny, good morning.
Hi.
I have a lot of respect for the show. I listen in frequently, and I really appreciate everything you do. I have to say, though, listening to the program this morning, I have to say that I feel that there is some prejudice a little bit against the BLM Ranger. That's my feeling on it. I'm kind of sensing it. Because in my mind, if you leave something in your vehicle locked, it's secured. I mean, if I leave a computer in my car, it's secured. And as to it being a firearm and accessible, to my knowledge, keeping a firearm in a locked container under California law is only to serve as an exemption to the concealed firearm law. Keeping it in a locked container exempts you from concealing said firearm. And that officer had it in his car, I assume locked, I would hope, but it not being in any other form of locked container in and of itself, to me, doesn't seem to be any violation of anything. And I think that common sense would dictate that if you have something in your vehicle locked, you have a reasonable assumption that it is secured. And, you know, I don't really engage in hero worship or anything, but I do appreciate what law enforcement officers do. I'm not a law enforcement officer myself, but you know, I've done my share of dirty work for the Republic. Most people don't want to do, you know, and I just got to say, I feel like the tone that's coming from the program this morning, I think might be steering the public in the wrong direction because it's putting out information that may not be accurate. And that's my comment.
All right. Well, I appreciate the comment and thank you for it. Marisa, you want to respond?
Yeah, just to say that I think a firearm is different than a computer. And someone who's lived in San Francisco for many years, I constantly am hearing the police tell us never to leave anything of value in our cars because locking your car is not, you know, does not make it safe, regardless of whether it's a benign object like a piece of technology or a firearm that could kill someone. And I just think that there are laws on our books that and again, that have been strengthened since this case and others in the Bay Area.
But there was a law even before. And you said $1,000 fine, in fact, could have been
levied. Well, the $1,000 fine didn't exist before. It was a misdemeanor, but there was really no punishment. Now it's $1,000 fine. But I think that's an interesting argument because I think that we do hold law enforcement to a higher standard. But take that out of the equation. Say this had been an average citizen with a gun permit. Like, how would we feel about them then? So, you know, having a concealed carry permit doesn't exempt you from having to store your firearm properly. I think this gets into bigger questions about gun control. But, you know, we have seen a lot of really terrible, awful cases in which people did not secure their guns and, you know, kids got them. So I don't know. Just as a human being, I would hope that our law enforcement is being careful with something that is a deadly weapon, and I'll just leave it at that.
Well, I thank Mo for the call, and we'll go right to another caller, and that's Tom. Tom, thanks for waiting. Join us. You're on the air.
Yes. Has the city government done, the courts and the DA's office done anything to dismiss these irrelevant 20-year-old minor cases, warrants, that require the sheriff to demand the return of this person? By federal law, states must ask for someone who has an outstanding warrant to come to and face charges. If those charges had been dropped, if the warrant had been dropped, he would have not have been brought to the city. What is the city doing about dropping all of these irrelevant warrants?
That is such a good question, and you have been paying attention so closely to this. So, yes, they have, actually. There is now a process in place to review all felonies and actually misdemeanors on a regular rolling basis that meet a certain sort of year threshold, and to proactively work with the DA and the courts to get those dismissed. Because, as you noted, it really wasn't up to the sheriff whether to honor that warrant. That was a court warrant, so under law they were they had to do that. So, yes, San Francisco does have a process now. I don't know about other jurisdictions, but that was one, I would say, really good thing that came out of this case was a real process for doing that.
And Tom, we thank you for the call. Hannah writes, if it had been a parent who had found the gun and fired it on purpose and accidentally killed their own child with a ricochet, I doubt there would have been charges. No, who knows,
yeah.
Right?
Who knows?
We'll go to Sacramento next. And Brad, let's get you on. Hi, Brad.
Hi, yeah. I was wondering if you guys had looked at any, like, federal employees who had screwed up before, like just talking about the promotion in general for the BLM employee.
You made a precedent in the Wachowski thing. Yeah, what do we know there, Marissa?
Well, Alex just broke this Wachowski story on Friday, so we are still doing reporting on it. As I said, I mean, one of the challenges we've had is that there's a lot more opacity in a lot of federal agencies. Quite frankly, they're further away. We may not have as many sources. But I can tell you that this is something Alex will definitely continue pushing on.
And we thank you for the call. Good to hear from you. One last call while we have Marissa here and while we have time. Matt, that's you. Hi.
Oh, hi. Yeah, my question was mostly answered by a previous caller. I was interested in the process whereby this accused person was transferred back to San Francisco and then released. I recall reading an article about the time of the shooting that said that this was fairly common for people to be transferred back and released.
It is, and I'm glad you had the question answered, and I'm glad we had you, Marissa, with us to help us as we continue to follow the story as it unfolds, and thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
And Alex Emsley will be reporting from the courtroom. You'll be hearing more news about this as the trial takes place. Thank you for being a part of this opening hour of Forum. We have another hour up ahead. Van Jones is going to join us in the hour ahead. Stay tuned for that. You're listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of the Minetti Schrem Museum of Art at UC Davis, who believe that all people deserve access to education and culture to enrich a lifetime of exploration and learning.